Chapter 44 Hack Days. There are many variations of hack days, but in this chapter, I describe one of my favorite techniques to quickly get a range of high potential ideas that are focused on solving a pressing business or customer problem. The two main types of hack days are directed and undirected. In an undirected hack day, people can explore whatever product ideas they like, so long as it's at least loosely related to the mission of the company. In a directed hack day, there's a customer problem. For example, something is really difficult to learn and use, or it takes too long to do, or business objective we've been assigned. For example, reduce the customer churn rate or increase customer lifetime value. And we ask people from the product teams to self-organize and work on any ideas they like that might address this objective. The goal is for the self-organizing groups to explore their ideas and create some form of prototype that can be evaluated and, if appropriate, tested on actual users. There are two major benefits to these directed hack days. The first is practical, as the technique facilitates the inclusion of engineers at ideation. I've mentioned several times in this book that many of the best ideas come from the engineers on the team, and we need to ensure this is happening. It should be happening on an ongoing basis, but this technique will ensure it happens. The second benefit is cultural. This is one of my favorite techniques for building a team of missionaries rather than mercenaries. The engineers, if they haven't already, are now diving much deeper into the business context and playing a much larger role in terms of innovation. Discovery prototyping techniques. Overview. Prototypes of various forms have been around for as long as we've been applying technology to solve problems. Per the famous Fred Brooks quote, "Plan to throw one away, you will anyhow." While Fred's quote is as relevant today as it was when it was first published in 1975, many things have changed, not the least of which is that the tools and techniques we have for developing prototypes and testing them have progressed dramatically. That said, I continue to find teams and even people I would consider thought leaders that have a very narrow interpretation of what is meant by the term prototype. When I press people, what I typically find is that they associate the term prototype with the type that they were first exposed to. If the first one you saw was used to test for feasibility, that's what you think of. If the first one you saw was used for usability testing, that's what you think of. But there are, in fact, many very different forms of prototypes, each with different characteristics and each suited to testing different things. And yes, some people get themselves into trouble trying to use the wrong type of prototype for the job at hand. In this overview, I highlight the major classes of prototypes, and in the chapters that follow, I go into depth on each of them. Feasibility prototypes. These are written by engineers to address technical feasibility risks during product discovery, before we decide whether something is feasible. Sometimes the engineers are trying out a new technology. Sometimes it's a new algorithm. Often it is about assessing performance. The idea is for the developer to write just enough code to be able to address the feasibility risk. User prototypes. User prototypes are simulations. There is a wide spectrum of user prototypes, from those intentionally designed to look like wireframes sketched out on paper, referred to as low-fidelity user prototypes, all the way up to those that look and feel like the real thing, referred to as high-fidelity user prototypes, where it can be difficult to tell it's just a simulation. Live data prototypes. Live data prototypes are a little more complicated to explain, but they are a critically important tool for several situations. The main purpose of a live data prototype is to collect actual data so we can prove something, or at least gather some evidence. Normally to find out whether an idea, a feature, a design approach, a workflow really works. This typically means two things. First, we need the prototype to access our live data sources. And second, we need to be able to send live traffic in enough quantity to get some useful data to the prototype. The key is that we don't want to have to build, test, and deploy a commercially viable product to do this. That would take far too long, cost far too much, and very likely yield huge waste. A live data prototype costs a small fraction of what it would cost to build a commercially viable product, which is what makes this such a powerful tool. Hybrid prototypes. There are also many hybrids, which combine aspects of the other types. For example, when working on search and recommendations in which we're focusing on relevance, we may need to have the prototype access live data sources, but we don't need to be able to send live traffic. In this case, we're not trying to prove anything, but we can learn a great deal by observing and discussing the results with the users. Remember that product discovery is all about coming up with the fastest, cheapest way to test out our ideas. So, depending on your particular idea and situation, you'll want to pick the flavor of prototype that best meets your needs. While we all might have our favorites, if you are competing against good product teams, you're going to need to be skilled at each of these.